Welcome to the What's the Law podcast by the team at Jackson's Law Firm. Jackson's is a full-service law firm based in the northeast of England, providing a wide range of legal services to businesses and private clients. We are here to chat about what's the law and how it can affect you at various stages of your life. Please note that we are recording this podcast remotely, which may affect the quality of the audio. In this episode, we will be looking at diversification in the farming sector as it continues to face a great deal of uncertainty, particularly with the fallout of Brexit and having withdrawn from Europe. We are now under the transitional arrangements in terms of BPS payments. Income from BPS will be reducing over the next few years, and as a result, farmers may be looking at alternative sources of income. My colleagues Nicola Nielsen and David Dartley are joined by Paul Topham from Azetz.
I'm Paul Topham, partner and Northeast Head of Agriculture at Azetz, based out of our Durham office. Azetz are a top 10 accountancy firm, and unlike other large firms, the majority of our clients are owner-managed, family-run, small and medium-sized businesses. We also have the largest number of agricultural clients of any accountancy firm in the UK.
Hi, I'm Nicola Nielsen. I'm partner at Jackson's and head of agricultural property.
Hello, my name's David Artley, and I'm a solicitor in the corporate and commercial department of Jackson's law firm.
I'm Karen Robinson. I'm a partner at Jackson's and head of business development and marketing. Paul, what are the considerations for farmers when looking at diversification?
At its best, diversification should complement the existing farm business. Increase profitability. It is important to note that diversification may not work for every farm business, and ventures outside the farmer's familiar skill set can often detract from the day-to-day running of the farming business.
Nicola, what are the legal issues that farmers should be aware of before moving forward with their new business venture?
Once an idea has been formed, it's important to consider a number of legal issues to ensure that you can actually go ahead with your plans. It's at this early stage that you need to take a look at your title deeds and documents, just to make sure that there's nothing lurking in the small print which would halt your new venture at the first hurdle. Hopefully there aren't, but it is imperative to find out at this early stage so that you don't invest a lot of time and money in a venture which can't ultimately proceed.
Nicola, can you give us an example of legal issues which might present problems?
Yes. Restrictive covenants are the first thing that come to mind. An example of a restrictive covenant which might pose a problem is one which prohibits buildings being erected on land. If you need a new office or retail space, can you actually build that without being in breach of covenant? Or what about a restriction which states the land can only be used for agricultural purposes? If there are restrictive covenants, we need to know who has the benefit of them. It might be possible to negotiate a release over part of the land that you would like to use for the diversified use, so all may not be lost. Or perhaps there's another area that isn't subject to the covenants. Could your diversified business operate from elsewhere on the farm? A secondary consideration is planning, both in terms of the use of the land and any new structures that might be required. If your diversified use isn't agricultural, then you'll need to check whether planning permission will be required to allow you to use the property for another purpose. There are permitted development rights in respect of agricultural buildings, which may mean that you can change their use without the need for planning permission, but you need to check the planning rules carefully. Even where the proposed new use falls within one of the categories of permitted development, there are still limitations. For example, some changes are only permitted in buildings up to a certain size. You may need to seek prior approval before commencing any works which are considered permitted development, so it is important that you check the planning requirements at an early stage. Of course, if your diversification plans require buildings to be erected or converted or even extended, then you may need planning permission and building regulation approval for those works. That's in addition to any planning permission for change of use. Obtaining planning permission does take time. You need to have plans drawn up, and once they're submitted, the planning process does take a number of weeks, so be prepared.
Thank you, Nicola. This all sounds really complicated, so I guess contact your legal advisor in the first instance.
Absolutely. Your legal advisor will be able to guide you regarding any restrictive covenants, and if necessary, we'll be able to put you in contact with a planner who could assist with any planning permission requirements too.
Paul, can you please talk through some examples of diversification?
There are a few limitations on the kind of activities you could diversify into. However, you may be restricted by your farm's physical resources and characteristics. And as Nicola's already covered, always look out for any planning issues. Some common examples of diversification: livestock products, such as producing and selling sheep cheese, opening a farm shop or cafe, alternative livestock, such as alpaca or llama, variation in crop produce, such as specialty flowers or energy crops, renewable energy, such as solar or wind farms, converting barns for storage facilities or to let as offices, farm-based tourism, such as camping, bed and breakfast, furnished holiday lets, or leisure activities such as motorsport.
That's really interesting, Paul. Thank you. Yeah, over the last few years, we've all seen farmers opening up their land to stay in glamping pods, for example. You know, I visited some glamping pods last year myself, and I've taken my son to see alpacas on farmers' land. So it's really interesting how the farmers have all been quite innovative over the last few years.
Yeah, I think over the last couple of years, probably from the uncertainty of Brexit, but now with the phasing out of the basic payment scheme, farmers have been looking at other income streams, and certainly farm-based tourism, your glamping pods and your furnished holiday lets seem to be the big activity that farmers are looking to go into.
Yeah, it's interesting with obviously what's happened over the last year. Staycations are certainly the way forward, and these glamping pods have become really, really popular.
Yeah, I agree. I think holidays in this country are going to boom over the next couple of years due to coronavirus.
Which is obviously great for the British economy, you know, and there are some beautiful places in this country to visit. You know, we don't have to go abroad. It's just a shame we can't rely on the sunshine. Excellent. So, Paul, once the decision has been made on the nature of the business being set up, how do they decide on the best structure for the new business?
Well, deciding on the right structure will involve many factors. Do we want the diversified activity to be a separate business in its own right? Will the stakeholders, that's the partners and or the shareholders of the farm business, mirror that in the diversified business? Will there be any implications for intellectual property? Are all parties happy for the diversified element of the business using the existing farm name, for example? It could be helpful as it may enhance the reputation using the good name of the farm, but it could also damage the existing farm's name if things don't work out as hoped. And also, will a diversified activity be using the farm's assets? So any plant machinery, land or buildings? And if so, there may be an element of risk involved, and a limited company structure may be more advantageous to protect assets by way of limited liability.
Yeah, and these are all the important factors to get right at the beginning. So I guess this is where the lawyers can help out. So David, what are the legal considerations when looking at business structures?
When you're deciding which structure is best for your new business, it's important to understand what the pros and cons are of each of the structures. So assuming that you've made a decision to have a separate business, then the most common vehicles for operating that business are either a sole trader, a partnership, a limited liability partnership, which is known as an LLP, or indeed setting up a limited company. Now, if none of these sound suitable, there are other options that you could pursue, but they're very specialist and niche. So if you think that you might need a different structure, then you need to discuss that with your professional advisors. So taking them in a logical order, the sole trader is the quickest and easiest to set up and to operate. It requires no formalities, but the downside to this is that it provides no limitation on your personal liability. similar to being a sole trader, is a partnership, which is two or more people operating a business with the aim of generating profit. You don't need to have a partnership agreement because there's the Partnership Act 1890, which sets default provisions. It's desirable to put one in place because obviously the Partnership Act is over 130 years old now and may be unsuitable for modern businesses. The downside to a partnership is that, again, it offers no limitations on either your or your partner's personal liabilities. So if you do want to limit your personal liability exposure, you'd probably need to have either a limited liability partnership, an LLP, or a limited company. In order to limit your liabilities, there is a consequence, and the consequence is increased formalities, publicity. You have to provide a lot of information, and you need to report on how your business is doing. So for the formalities, you're going to need formal constitutional documents which govern the running of the business. So for an LLP, that will be the LLP agreement. And for a limited company, that's going to be the Articles of Association. So these govern how the company operates day to day, how decisions are made, etc. In the case of a company, the Articles of Association have to comply with some quite restrictive rules under the Companies Act 2006. So you may also want to put in place a shareholders agreement, which is a contract between each of the shareholders and the company to govern the relationship. But that's a lot more flexible because it doesn't have to comply with the rules of the Companies Act 2006. So the reporting obligations that you're going to have with the limited liability structure, both an LLP and a company are going to have to publish certain financial information through Companies House. And you personally will similarly have to publish your details as either a member or as a shareholder, a director, as appropriate for the structure. The reason why you have to comply with these reporting obligations and publicity obligations is because both an LLP and a limited company have their own legal personality. So that means that they can enter into contracts and they can own property in their own right. So the publicising of the information is a means of protecting anybody who contracts with the LLP or the company so that they can make an informed decision about whether or not they want to contract with this entity. It's also worth bearing in mind at this point that this isn't an absolute limitation on liability. In practice, when your new business wants to either borrow money or enter into a contract, especially if it's a significant contract, you may be asked to give a personal guarantee so that you will guarantee to pay if either the LLP or the company cannot or does not pay. So there is commercial considerations where lenders or counterparties to a contract may want you to guarantee things personally. So it isn't a complete bar to a personal liability.
Thanks, David. This all sounds really complicated, so I guess it's imperative to get in touch with your legal advisor to make sure that you avoid any potential issues further down the road.
It's certainly worth asking the question early and taking some advice. If you choose to go down, especially a limited liability route, you want to get your constitutional documents right at this stage. At the outset of a business, when everybody is feeling very positive about what's going to happen, it's often a really good time to have potentially difficult conversations about what will happen when it goes wrong. And you put these into your constitutional documents so that you have a process to go through if anything happens and if you need to make a difficult decision later. Anecdotally, we find that businesses that do this have fewer problems in the future. But also, if you don't do this, if you don't put these structures in place, if it goes wrong, it can become incredibly expensive and incredibly difficult. So it is really worth getting this right at the start.
Paul, presumably, as with most businesses, there would be potentially tax implications. Can you talk through these, please?
Definitely, yes. Firstly, let's consider how profits will be taxed. So a limited company structure would pay tax on its profits at corporation tax rates, which are currently 19%, although these are increasing to 25% from the 1st of April 2023 for profits over $250,000. Whereas a partnership, LLP or sole trade would incur 20% basic rate tax, rising to 40% for higher rate taxpayers. A limited company can also claim the 130% new super deduction for qualifying expenditure on plant and machinery, whereas in a partnership or sole trader, it may only qualify for 100% capital allowances. So a lot of the decision on structure will be led by what level of profit is expected by the diversified activity. Then we also have longer term tax implications to think about, such as inheritance tax, and tying everything in with a succession plan. Depending on the level of income from the diversified activity, it may be considered that the existing farm business is no longer farming in the main, and as such, valuable reliefs such as agricultural property relief could be lost without careful planning. Agricultural property relief gives 100% relief when assets pass on death, reducing any inheritance tax to nil, which would therefore be very costly if this relief was to be lost. The type of activity being undertaken will also be a factor. Furnished holiday lets, for example, wouldn't qualify for agricultural property relief. However, they may qualify for business property relief if they meet certain conditions. If the diversified activity is undertaken by different members of the family, it may also be a good time to consider longer-term inheritance and succession plans. For example, a transfer of land and buildings into a separate entity could be deemed a disposal and therefore crystallise a capital gain. However, there are several reliefs, such as rollover relief, holdover relief, and entrepreneur's relief, or business asset disposal relief as it is now known, which may be useful to investigate before making this decision. And then there are also VAT implications. The farming activities will be zero rated supplies for VAT, whereas the diversified activity will likely be standard rated. As such, if both activities are trading under one farm business, any output tax on the diversified income will need to be recorded correctly. If a separate business structure is chosen, the VAT threshold, which is currently 85,000, will need to be observed.
Thanks, Paul. An awful lot to consider there. Would you recommend, as best practice, for farmers to keep in touch with their accountants on a regular basis? Because it looks like, you know, that there's a lot to consider here, and obviously things change throughout the year.
Definitely, yes. I always advise clients, contact us first before you make any decision. It's always worth chatting it through. It's a lot harder for us to unpick things after the event.
Paul, another question. Should the new business finances be included in the farm business accounts, or should the two businesses be run separately?
Whether we decide to run the diversified activity through a separate business or as part of the farm business, in my opinion, it's always advisable to separate the accounting. This will avoid income and expenditure all going into the one pot, which could make it hard to establish the true performance of each side of the business. It's even more important if the structure chosen for the business is different to that of the farm. As we have already discussed, the diversified business may have different partners or shareholders to the farm, and as such, profits would need to be identified and allocated correctly.
And does this mean a lot of extra work for the farming business? Or is it quite easy to do?
It can be quite easy to do if you separate the accounting, have separate bank accounts, probably have separate accounting systems. So if you're using Sage or Xero, set it up as a separate business.
Thanks, Paul. Nicola, can I just ask you, are there any other considerations before finalising the new business arrangements?
That really depends upon the outcome of all of this decision making that's gone on before. That will dictate whether there's anything else that would need to be considered. So, for example, if the diversified business is to operate as a separate business entity and perhaps through a limited company, then that company would need to lease part of the farm from whoever the freeholder might be. The owners of the farm might also be directors of that company, which is operating the diversified business, but they must remember that they are separate legal entities, so a lease would be the appropriate way to regulate that relationship. It's important to be clear as to who will be responsible for maintaining the buildings which are occupied by the diversified business, and by clearly documenting this at the outset, It means that all parties know what the expectations are and they can budget accordingly. It goes back to what both Paul and David have been saying about getting everything documented and organised correctly at the outset. It will hopefully help to avoid any disputes and issues going forward.
So, David, can I just ask you, are there any other commercial legal considerations?
Paul said earlier that the new business may want to make use of the farm's existing assets, and that might include the intellectual property in the name of the farm. This should be documented, and that will either be in a commercial agreement if it's for assets of the farm, or a license for the intellectual property in the name. And that's similar in needs to the leases that Nicola's just discussed, in that they would demarcate the costs involved in maintaining or replacing the assets, but they also allow the farm to retain ownership. And that's especially important if the new business may become independent at some point in the future. Another consideration for any new business, you should consider the terms on which the new business will deal with its customers. So that is, how will prices be set? How and when will payments be made? What the customer can expect from you and what you can expect from the customer. And of course, what happens if things go wrong with the customer relationship? If you set these out in a terms of business document at the outset, you will save significant time and expense later if you need to rely on any of these terms. And then finally, I would suggest that depending on the type of business, you should have a think about an exit strategy. If you may want to sell the diversified business but keep the farm, or indeed vice versa, it's important to make sure that the interplay between the two is properly documented so that each could be a standalone entity. Another way you might want to develop this business is perhaps to franchise it. If you do franchise your business, then your franchisees would expect you to have the right to grant them the necessary rights for them to run the business. So, for example, if the name is shared with the farm, you will need to have a formal arrangement in place between the farm and the diversified business to pass that on. It's always worth looking at these at the start, because Paul was very clear on this. Getting it right now is much, much easier than trying to unpick and rectify things at a later date.
David, you mentioned intellectual property earlier. Can you give me another example of why farming business would need advice on intellectual property?
Yeah, intellectual property could be particularly important if your new business is going to develop anything. So it may develop a product, but that could also be a method of doing something, or it could just be something written down, or, you know, indeed a podcast. There are strict rules on intellectual property and the ownership of intellectual property, who owns it. So it's important that if you're going to be developing anything at all in your new business, that you have the necessary documentation in place which says exactly who is going to own this intellectual property, because that can really tie a business up. You know, if it's developed a product, but it's accidentally given ownership of that product to another entity, then you can't use it. So that's really key for anything where you're going to be developing something.
Interesting. Thank you, David. Nicola, can you give us some key takeaways from this episode?
In conclusion, we can summarise that in these ever-changing times, diversification may be an attractive option for farms wishing to secure income streams. As Paul said, it may not be the answer for every farming business, but as we've demonstrated, by planning ahead, you'll be able to establish whether your proposed diversified activities will work for you and your business. Proper planning will also ensure that you properly understand the legal and accounting issues which need to be considered as part of your proposal.
David, Paul, would you like to add anything here?
I think key, and I think this has come through from what Nicola and Paul have said, as well as what I've been saying, is that when you're starting a business, that's the time to really think about how it's going to operate and really make the decisions that you have to make. Make them now, then you can put everything in place, because it is much, much better to get it right at the outset than to have to go back and unpick and try to correct later. It will save you a lot of money.
Yeah, I would agree with David. Starting any new venture, the planning is always key. Getting that structure right from the outset can save an awful lot of pain in the long run. not all new ventures will be successful and have the outcome that you want. And getting the structure right will mean this less complicated in the long run. Likewise, to have a successful venture, you need to get those foundations right from the outset to enable it to grow.
I would like to thank Nicola, David and Paul for taking part in this episode, and thank you for listening. If you have enjoyed listening to this podcast, please leave us a review on your favourite podcast app and have a look on Jackson's website to see what other topics we are podcasting on.